This is On the Media. I'm Michael Loewinger, sitting in this week for Brooke Gladstone. The incipient chatter about a possible run for Trump in 2024 is a sure sign that the presidential campaign season has begun. In previous cycles around this point, profiles of presidential hopefuls filled the glossies.
On the cover of the new Time magazine, you have Marco Rubio headlined the Republican savior.
Our senior legal correspondent Jeffrey Toobin has a brand new article on Ted Cruz in the new issue of the New Yorker magazine.
But this time around, at least so far, the magazine covers are missing politicians posed in their just casual enough business attire. One reason might be, as argued in a slate of recent articles, that when it comes to the Republican Party, brushing off legacy outlets is par for the course now. For instance, in March, four candidates running for governor in Pennsylvania said they'd only participate in a debate ahead of their primary if the moderator was a registered Republican and could prove that their publication had never, quote, maligned any of the men. Earlier this month, a Missouri debate was canceled after one of the candidates said he'd only show up if the event was run by right-wing news sites. And last weekend, the only public video of Florida's annual GOP summit was produced by one of the predominantly conservative reporters who were granted access. Up and down the ballot, distrust of the press seems to be shaping more and more of the coverage. For presidential contenders in particular, Tucker Carlson issued something of a warning at last week's Family Leadership Summit in Iowa.
You need to be really wary of candidates who care what the New York Times think. You really, really do.
In an article in New York Magazine titled, Why Republicans Stopped Talking to the Press, reporter David Friedlander observed the differences between 2014 and now.
There were profiles of Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, pretty much everybody who was thinking of running, Jeb Bush. And there really haven't been any of those this year, or haven't been very many of them. There was a big one a few weeks ago, a profile of Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. But he didn't participate in it. He wasn't interviewed. The reporters, a great story, had no access to him. And that was unheard of even just a few years ago.
There's another cohort of Republicans, you say, who are not talking to the press, and that's people who maybe are afraid of having to own up to their affiliations with Trump.
If you were to do a fair profile of any Republican, you would have to ask them, you know, in 2015 and 2016, you said that Donald Trump was a threat to the country and a threat to the Republican Party. And you don't say that anymore. Now you like him. So what were you wrong about? There's no real good answer to that question. Ted Cruz said he was a danger. Marco Rubio said he was a danger. I mean, Rand Paul said he was a danger. Lindsey Graham said he was a danger.
Trump dragged all of them individually. And then only a couple years later, they were in lockstep with him in his candidacy and his presidency.
Right. And so, like, what is it about Donald Trump's first term in office, Senator X, did you see that made you once think he was like a threat and a danger, and now you think he's deserving of a second term? And the answer to that question is obviously because, you know, generously, that's where my voters are. And also, like, if I'm a politician, I want to be a successful politician and I want to have political power. Those are not good answers. Those are not the kind of things you can tell a reporter. And so you just kind of get stuck on this question, I think, which is kind of like, you can change your mind, but what made you change your mind?
I do want to get specific, though, because I think there are some exceptions to the phenomenon that you're noticing. Like, for instance, Donald Trump still makes himself pretty available to reporters, right? And also, I feel like I see right-wing politicians on the Sunday shows, the talk shows, pretty frequently.
I think less and less. I think the Sunday talk shows are kind of the same cohort of politicians increasingly. And you don't find the folks that are looking to advance their careers, run for president or run for higher office on the talk shows. But as you point out, Donald Trump, I mean, it's amazing. He's the one who, in a way, like, created this dynamic. He's the one who talked about, you know, the press, the enemy of the people, and had his rally audiences turn around and boo the press pen in the back. But he also seems like the only one who kind of is in on the joke. He turns down no interview requests. He does everything all the time. he kind of does this whole thing with a wink and a nod, and everyone else kind of bought it.
In your piece, you quoted one GOP advisor working with a likely contender who said that there really wasn't any point in talking to reporters because, quote, every outlet is just chasing resistance rage clicks. And this is a kind of another nuance in this phenomenon that I'm interested in, because it seems like for some current members of Congress, not necessarily people who are planning to run for president in 2024, that this is basically their whole media strategy. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, they don't talk to journalists, but they've figured out that their outrageous comments are going to get clipped and written up just about every week anyway.
If so-called liberal media is outraged by something they've said or done, they then recycle that to their own supporters and send that, you know, in fundraising emails. You know, NPR just called me a liar, said I was a fraud, give me $15 and we can stand up to the liberal media kind of thing. And as a journalist, it kind of puts you in a little bit of a box. I mean, on the one hand, you don't want to give these things more oxygen, but on the other hand, you kind of have to cover the outrages.
You quoted Richard Nixon, who told Henry Kissinger, quote, never forget the press is the enemy. It's not like this started with Trump. We've seen for a long time the Republican Party disliking the press as part of their platform. But how do you think it changed from paying lip service to that distaste to going to just kind of not interacting with reporters?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things. I mean, I think, first of all, there's been a really robust growth in the universe of right-wing media outlets, websites, podcasts, you name it. That's kind of created this ecosystem where that's where the kind of Republican voters are. And so there's much less of a need to kind of deal with the mainstream press.
Yeah, like Donald Trump helped legitimize, and I use that word in quotes, some far-right outlets by giving them press credentials to come into White House briefings, by often taking their questions before those of mainstream outlets. He has given interviews to outlets like InfoWars that before Trump were considered extremely fringe. And as you mentioned, the whole right-wing podcast thing has exploded.
A lot of these folks have their own podcasts themselves. I mean, Ted Cruz like seems to spend as much time on his podcast as he does in the Senate. They've spent so much time, you know, poisoning in their voters' minds the idea of the mainstream press that to sort of be interviewed by the mainstream press would be seen as consorting with the enemy. But you don't have to worry about that if you're going on Newsmax.
The media landscape is fundamentally different than it was in 2014 and certainly going back further. But you also think that something has changed in newsrooms among the people who would be doing the presidential profiles, who would be doing the sort of routine local coverage.
Newsrooms did kind of become, I want to be careful here, like a little bit more nakedly partisan after Trump. You know, one of the things we always used to say is you can't have any biases if you're a political reporter, except biases for the First Amendment or biases for freedom of the press. And Trump, you know, was frankly a demagogue with anti-democratic tendencies, to say the least. And so I think that sort of brought out the notion of the press being like oppositional as a kind of baseline, because how could you be otherwise?
What do you think is the consequence of coverage that doesn't feature as many Republican voices speaking about their policies, their visions, their own candidacy, their own voting records in their own words?
I mean, I think there's a way there's like an opportunity here. Access, I think, can be a curse for a lot of political journalists. So if you just have to dig a little deeper and a little harder without it, it's fine. But that said, I think that the discourse will be degraded further without their participation. I mean, the idea of these profiles and these stories is you treat the politician and their ideas seriously, and you talk about their biography and the way their biography informs their ideas. And you learn something about the country, our politics, and the people who hope to lead the country in these kinds of journalistic treatments. And if we don't have that, I just think the historical record will just kind of be degraded in some fundamental way.
David, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
David Friedlander is the author of the New York Magazine story, Why Republicans Stop Talking to the Press.